Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
Right, so thanks everybody for coming today. Business Matters, we're going to be talking about startup businesses and small businesses and how they can be successful and maybe a few tips and pieces of advice on what to do to make a new business give it that extra chance of being successful, and perhaps, you know, a few things not to do to avoid failure. We're joined today by Clive Haywood here, who we'll tell you in a second a quick run through of his career, but amongst other things he assured me that he's given advice to over 200 small and start-up businesses over the last few years. So hopefully, if he doesn't know what he's talking about, then none of us does. It didn't say that they'd all failed, had they? So Clive, do you want to give a quick resume of your career and why you're here today, and then we'll get going?
Yeah, happily do that. And first of all, thank you very much for inviting me, and nice to see you here today. I've been working now for about, would you believe, 40 years. It seems, you can see how little hair there is left. That's what happens after all the stresses and strains. I spent 25 years in the corporate world, partly in Bedfordshire. Actually, Bedford's biggest employer, Texas Instruments, for 5 years. I also worked for BT in many of their national parts of the BT organisation, both in the UK and outside. I've had experience of economic development activity, local regeneration and economic development, again, both in the UK and in Europe. And over the last 12 years, I've run my own consultancy business, advising directors of small and medium businesses on ways of improving the performance of their business. So that's primarily what I'm about.
And when you say small and medium-sized businesses, what sort of terms?
Yeah, because that's a good question, actually, Stephen, because if you take the government definition, then an SME, a small and medium enterprise, is between 5 and 249 employees, and there are micro businesses that are 1 to 4 employees. In terms of turnover, a small business would consider to probably be considered from about 250,000 up to about 25 million. That's the sort of the government definition. The ones that I've typically worked with have really got turnover levels of between 250,000 and about £10 million, and employees up to about 100. That's typically the sort of client base that I've worked with.
So we're just getting going. So I thought, just before we do get going, maybe we could do a quick hands up of everybody here. Who here has either started their own business already or is thinking of starting their own business? Pretty much everybody, which is probably...
So could I ask a supplementary to that? Because sure, I think that's a very good question. It's very handy to see how many people are either in the process or already started up. How many people, so keep your hand up if you already have a number of customers that you supply a product or service to. Thank you. Very handy.
Excellent. Can we ask what sort of, what it is?
Yeah, it's a retail business. I had it about 5-6 years ago, and then now I leased it.
Brilliant.
But basically what we're talking about is most people here are in the pre-startup stage and are considering rather than having an active business.
Yeah.
So I just want to give you some little bit background about my students. I'm teaching them strategic finance, so I'm focusing on not just delivering academic syllabus or curriculum, but I am going to give them some critical skills to be future entrepreneurs.
Good.
And how to be a future leader.
Excellent.
Our unlimited responsibility. So if you can add something like that, it would be great.
Okay. Well, we've got 40 minutes. Keep this quite informal. Do ask questions as we go along. Neither Clive nor I mind particularly which direction we end up going on, as long as it's all about sort of business and so on. I think maybe, Clive, we'll start off on, you know, what what and why, you know, getting a business going, where does the initial inspiration come from? Why is it a great idea? Mm. Is it a great idea? What experience have you had with people who've said to you, Clive, I really want to start a business, but I don't quite know what it is, or I've got a vague idea, or...
It's an interesting one, that, because in most cases when you get that, it isn't that I don't know what I want to do. Usually people that I've had some contact with, because of the sort of jobs I do and the sort of advice that I provide and the agencies through which I provide them, people already have something. And what they usually have is a product or service either in their head, or they have a nearly finished product or service ready to go to market. What usually happens is that they've come up with a concept, and in many cases the concept sounds great at first view, but not a great deal of thought has gone into who is going to pay for the product or service. I suppose one of the best examples, and this is probably particularly pertinent to a university, an awful lot of new apps have been launched in the last 10 years, mobile phone apps. And a good mobile phone app that people will pay money for, and will pay money for around the world, and is very simple and easy to use and keeps on being used, you can make an awful lot of money, but you would probably be in the 1% or less of people who have launched an app, because the other 99% have probably spent a lot of time and energy thinking about an idea and tried to launch it without really a full understanding of the financial model that goes behind it. And that's a big, big issue for a lot of people starting a business. You may have what you think is a great idea for a product or service, but it's really important before you go anywhere near launch to understand who's going to buy it, who are going to be your customers, and where are they going to be in many cases, because although the world is a small place and an online platform in theory means that you should be able to trade internationally, globally without any trouble at all, the reality is that in the UK, less than 15% of small businesses trade internationally. The other 85% are only trading within the UK. So it's very important to think about where you are going to sell this product and who you're going to sell it to. And is there anything else out there that is going to compete or already competes with what you are thinking about launching? Because the world is a competitive place. If you can come up with something genuinely new, then fantastic. You may be able to go straight into a new market. It may be very easy to get investor finance if you need money. May be very easy if you've got something that is genuinely new and groundbreaking and there is a real need for a lot of people. But if what you are going to be launching is what I suppose you might call a Me Too service, there are lots of them out there already, and I'm launching something that's already out there, you have to think long and hard about who you're going to sell it to. Now, it was interesting, you sir, you suggested that you already have a business and you've launched into the retail market in Luton. Now, if I were to be starting out with maybe an obvious business to go into in Luton, you could say, well, yes, there's a lot of people that are in that market. There's clearly a market in the retail environment for goods within Luton, but you need to think very carefully about who else is out there already in the same retail space. Clothing is a good example. If you think about fashions, fashion varies from one place to another, varies from one town to another, varies from one street to another, varies from one culture to another. And if you're thinking about going into something in the world of fashion, you need to think very carefully about, well, who else is already in that space? Because coming up with a new range of fashion items is a very personal thing. And what you might think is completely new and unique, somebody else might think is so wacky that they will never buy that. Because where am I going to wear it? at what event would I wear that thing? So you've got to be very, very careful, whatever it is you're thinking about launching as a product or service, who is going to buy it, what's already out there, what is it worth, can you make a profit selling it?
Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
You focus on sort of, if you like, an innovative idea, an original idea and that sort of thing. Of course, the vast majority of businesses aren't particularly original.
They're not.
And you, you know, so I saw somebody in here drinking a cup of coffee a minute ago. So we all know there's been hundreds, if not thousands, of coffee shops opened in this country and in other countries around the world over the last 10 or 20 years. Nothing original about them, being coffee shops since, well, I don't know, the last 200 years, I think. Lloyd's Insurance Market started in a coffee shop. So there's nothing particularly new about coffee. There might be something new about how it's packaged up or whatever. And yet, more and more open, and they open very successfully. So I guess it's then about understanding that this particular product, coffee shop, if we're talking coffee shops now, will only serve a certain area, and if there isn't one in a particular area, then you've got a viable, in principle, a viable location to open that coffee shop, because there hasn't been one up until now. If there's one 50 metres down the road, you've obviously got a much less attractive situation.
Yeah, I mean, coffee's a particular example, and it's a very trendy market, and it's very topical. There's been an awful lot said and been on television about the coffee market in the last few weeks, never mind the last few years. But yes, it's a very buoyant market, and I've had quite a lot of discussions with people running catering businesses, and you probably won't be surprised to know that tea and coffee are the two most profitable parts of a catering business. Why? Because the component parts in a cup of tea or a cup of coffee are tiny in comparison with what the notional selling price is. So if you are selling a cup of coffee between £2 and £3, which seems to be the high street going rate for a premium cup of coffee, the component parts of that, if you take the staff and buildings out of it, you are looking at a few pence. So you have massive margin available in a product of that sort. But that's only the first part. What you have to consider is how Costa got to being Costa. How did they get to the size they are right now? And it wasn't just by producing good coffee. There's an awful lot of branding, marketing, an awful lot of innovative packaging and brand awareness that has to go out there. So while it may only cost you a few pence per cup of coffee, it's costing you 10 pence for the coffee maximum, and you're selling it for £2 plus, great, you've got a huge margin there. Their biggest cost is their high street presence, the floor space, all the maintenance, all the overhead business rates, all of those sorts of things. Staff costing, lot of staff running any sort of outlet like that. And of course, you might find that in a typical working day, that you sell a lot of cup of coffee, lots of cups of coffee between 8 o'clock and 9:30, people going to work, an awful lot of cups of coffee between 12 and 2, people having lunch, and a lot of cup of coffee between 5 and 6 when they finish work. But what are those staff doing all the rest of the time? You've got to pay for them, they've still got to be there, so you've got to think about the management of those costs associated with that. So the staffing is a second big chunk of cost to be associated with. And of course the third and perhaps biggest part is their marketing. Because Costa only got to be Costa by brand awareness. You have to go out and spend a lot of money on marketing yourself to get out there and be a well-known name. So it might be fine to start off locally in a very tight area, and starting maybe in a community like a university might be a very good place to start one. Now, most universities have already got their own catering supplies already tied up. But if you can come up with something really niche and different, why not maybe use your own educational establishment to test it out? Because a university might be very amenable to you as an entrepreneur, especially an entrepreneur going through a business degree, in trying out your business idea. Who better than a captive audience of several thousand people to try out your business idea? Don't wait until you finish university, try it now.
Okay, question.
So back to your point about this coffee shop not existing in this certain area, maybe there's a reason why. There might be a gap in the market, but is there a market in that gap?
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very, very valid question. I guess if you went back a few years, there were lots of gaps, weren't there? And they've got filled in. So it may be that the, if you like, I'm from a supermarket background, when, as you know, so I worked for Tesco for a long time, and when I first started working for Tesco, there were a lot less supermarkets in the country than there were 5 years later or 10 years later. And all the time, the industry analysts were saying, there's enough, there's no room for any more supermarkets. But strangely enough, there was room. But you're right, there could be a cultural reason or whatever. But
I mean, just on that particular one, let's stay with retail and let's stay with the big names. I'd like to put Tesco and the likes of Sainsbury's to one side, and I'd like to bring into the discussion maybe Waitrose and Lidl. Because if you are looking at retail examples and cultural differences, you need to think about the market for the service that you're going to provide. And with the best will in the world, you would not go and put a Waitrose supermarket in a location that had virtually the entire population living around it on very low incomes, because they would simply not be able to afford their weekly shop in the same way as a Lidl. I think there was something in the newspaper yesterday that said if you were going to go and buy your Christmas dinner for eight people in, and they didn't use Lidl, they used Aldi, very similar market, target market. If you were going to buy your Christmas dinner for eight people in Aldi, it would cost you £22. If you were going to buy the same Christmas dinner for eight people in Marks and Spencer's, it would cost you £50. So you need to think about the market you're targeting. Who is going to be able to buy your product in the location, potentially if it's location specific, or if it's online, who are you going to compete with, and how it's going to be trading nationally, internationally?
Yeah, thank you. Your thoughts is completely understandable, but I just want to add something. The talent of management expertise is one of the main component of the success of the business, because as you can see from, it is not just the coffee shop. In the on a bigger scale, for example, on Apple iPhones, if you can see the cost of these phones is less than a few £100, but the value of this phone, they are selling it for over than £900. So it is not just the matter of the actual material and how much does it cost. On the management expertise, what they are going to give to their customers.
Right. Oh, well, there's several things we haven't even touched on so far, and I think you touched on three there. You touched on skills.
Yes.
You touched on aspirational value. This is part of marketing.
Yeah.
This is how you market yourself as a company. And there are many, many different facets to that. If we had the entire afternoon to do this, we could cover some of this stuff in more depth. But we need to touch on marketing, and aspirational value and the credibility and everything associated with it is a very important part of what we're talking about here. So and thirdly, I think the skills, the knowledge you have within the business, and how able they are to turn what seems like a bright idea into something of significant value. It was only 30 years ago that Apple had nowhere near the credibility of Microsoft.
Yes.
But if you flip it on its head and you look over the last 5 to 10 years, and particularly more recently, the value that is associated with an Apple product far outweighs what it might at first appear, and the actual technology that sits within it. Apple has got a particular way of working, and it's not everybody's cup of tea, but people who start using Apple products become evangelists for Apple products. And instead of just themselves being the owner and the user of the product, they then start to become part of a bigger community. They share those apps and they get other people. They sell the Apple product on behalf of the manufacturer. So there's an evangelism associated with particular products. That's all part of marketing and innovation and the credibility that has come about by the individuals who lead those companies.
Yeah, I just want to support your main thoughts about that. Well, the last app, the WhatsApp application, they sold it with few million pounds and there is no physical component for it. It is just innovation. Yeah, it cost more than two multinational companies for just one application.
It's crazy. It really is. And I mean, you know, one of the things that WhatsApp is sold on is the fact that there is a security that there isn't in some other forms of, effectively, it's a text. It's a text message.
Yes.
That's what WhatsApp is. You can attach images and stuff like that. I use WhatsApp, you know, you look at it as a technology, and the value that's been given to it far outweighs what it might at first appear.
That's existed for years. I mean, not a lot of time ago, we had PayPal. Elon Musk created it, sold it to eBay, and he made a bucket load of money out of it. It doesn't run off any physical component. It's only code. Even before that, well, you had DOS. DOS was built on a computer, but it didn't need a physical component. It was just code. And the idea of DOS, the value of DOS, is what created Microsoft and what actually built up Microsoft as a company. It's not their actual physical value. You know, we're not dealing with gold or silver.
It's brand association. This is brand association. This is really, really important.
And intellectual property.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's why, I don't know, a Chanel bag or something like that costs a lot more than a bag from Primark. But they'll do the same thing. And they actually have the same type of materials. See what I mean?
Now, you see, it was interesting there because it was the ladies that laughed at that. Now, you and I probably, well, I certainly don't, you may well not have handbags that you use. The ladies probably have far more handbags than they could ever use, but they will continue to buy them. It may be the same with other retail items that any of us acquire. It's about brand value, brand association, and market position.
Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
I'll give you an example. I worked until a few years ago as operations director of Emma Bridgewater Pottery. Anyone come across it?
Bridgewater, yeah.
Okay, well, it's an English thing. It's designer pottery, and its most famous product is a mug for coffee or tea with polka dots on. It's a different form of similar. These mugs, each one costs £20 each. Mm. Yeah, it does exactly the same job as, well, a paper cup does. It holds a cup of coffee or it holds a cup of tea. That's not why people buy them. We used to take them round the factory. They're all handmade. They could talk to the people making the mugs, actually molded. They weren't physically molded, but putting the clay together, decorating them, taking them to the kilns to be fired and glazed and all of that sort of stuff. So they started to develop a personal attachment to them. The actual physical cost of this mug was about £3, but it would sell for £20. Always need to bear in mind this: the cost of distribution, the cost of actually getting those mugs into, they're sold in John Lewis department stores, for example. So someone's got to distribute those, put them, someone's got to have shop space, selling space in that shop to hold that product. They're not going to do that for nothing. They're only going to do that if they're going to sell, and the retailer in this case is going to make the profit. So there's a whole, you know, supply chain thing that you need to go through when we say, oh, well, that's ridiculous, that Apple phone costs £100 and it costs a lot less to make. There's more than the actual physical components and the intellectual property. So the intellectual property of these mug designs, for example, actually it was virtually impossible to get copyright or any intellectual property associated with that, because they were too easy to copy. In fact, people like Tesco and Marks and Spencers did copy them. You'll still find copies in their shops today, selling at a quarter of the price. But a lot of people will just go for the original, like with the original Chanel bag. Or you'll get the cheap bag bought from the guy on the beach down in Marbella or somewhere. So it's difficult. Yes, question.
It comes back to the point of branding. brand distinction. Brand has an awareness. You have certain ideas associated with certain brands, which add on to the product.
I think that's what brand perception is all about, how different consumers perceive. Because like brand, because that's what I'm doing my decision on. Sorry, because like brand perception, that's what I do. Brand perception in different cultures. I'm trying to see how the American Chinese culture perceive the Nike brand. So it all brings us back to perception. Most people now that do, have Chanel bags will prefer to say, "Oh, I will buy a Chanel bag. I'll not buy a Chanel bag in £1 store because this is a Chanel bag I want to buy because it's more expensive." Me now, I can say I'm going to buy a Chanel bag in £1 store because I don't care, like, I don't care, I don't see Chanel bag as something that is so out there. And so it all brings us back to perception and how people see.
Yeah. So how does that, I'm going to bring that back to Clive now. So branding and brand value in a startup business or a new small business, have you, in your time of advising companies, have you come across situations where people have been able to establish quite quickly a sort of brand value?
Yeah, that's a really good question because you know, we've been talking about some big names here, and in most cases to get a brand value associated with your own product from an early stage startup product is very, very hard work. You need to get some credibility. You need to get people, you need to get recognized individuals on side. If you have big names in a similar industry promoting your product and you get them to say how good that product is, that will rub off on your product.
So because you'll need celebrity endorsements.
Celebrity endorsements. I mean, it is one of the reasons why you know, celebrities will be out there marketing different products or services. People will pay them money just because they are a known name to promote their product and to have say nice things about it. It is a recognized way of earning money for many top names. It isn't just the industry they're in. I mean, you may find that you know, there are actors out there who are known for being very good actors in a certain genre, but actually those same actors may be on television. If you watch the Christmas TV ads, see all the well-known names that are out there promoting products and services that are absolutely nothing to do with their day job. The reason that they're doing it is because, you know, Harry Potter, there's a really good example. Everybody knows Daniel because of his Harry Potter. Okay, he's done a bunch of other good stuff since then, but if he went on television and promoted a series of products that maybe had some association with some of the characters out of Harry Potter, but that's too close. If he had, he promoted a series of products that would be seen to be a logical link with him, people will buy them because he is seen as Harry Potter. If Harry Potter says it's a good product, my son or daughter is going to want that product because Harry Potter says it's good. It's celebrity endorsement. It's what happens. It's real life.
It's Quidditch t-shirts.
Quidditch t-shirts, absolutely. So getting a brand is not a, getting a recognized brand is not a quick thing to do. You can spend a huge amount of money and possibly succeed. You can spend a huge amount of money and fail. Getting some credibility, getting some traction, getting it step by step by step, and getting a value recognition against some of the recognized names in the industry already is a good way to do things. Good way to do things. I would not encourage somebody thinking of launching a new product on a shoestring budget to suggest that they go out and spend hundreds of thousands of pounds on it on day one just to try and create a brand, because the reality of it is there might not even necessarily be a market for that thing. It's far more important to work out where the market is first of all, do some market testing, check that it will sell, check what it's up against, make sure it's going to be the right price and that it is profitable. Because the bottom line of it is, while some people go into setting up and running a business just because they want to do it, or just because they really like the product or concept that they come up with, 99% of people go into running a business because they want to make money. The bottom line of running a business is to make a profit.
Can I Okay. I think nearly everybody here said they were thinking about starting their own business. So I want to ask why you're thinking of doing that. Is it because, okay, first of all, is it because you want to make a lot of money? Hands up. Some do.
Can be, boss, you know, you don't have anybody to control you.
I was just going to come on to that. Was it about being independent and being in control, if you like?
Sorry, they're two entirely different things.
Which, what?
Being independent and being in control.
Yeah, you're right. Feeling you're in control. Sorry,
feeling you're in control, I can live with. Being in control, no, that's something entirely different.
Okay, so how many people want to go into business because they want to feel they're in control of their own lives?
Okay.
Okay, right. Any other reasons that... Yeah. Apart from those two?
Passion.
Passion for what?
So, because just I wanted to have my own company, my own marketing and my own consultancy company. Like, seem like to what you're doing. But I'm doing it because of that's what I'm good at. I'm good at giving ideas. I'm good at creating my own ideas.
That's why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Mixture of them, yeah.
I say legacy.
Legacy.
That's a very important point.
Uh-huh.
What do you want to get out the other end of it?
Do you want to expand on that?
Well, but I'm only on the media business. I don't actually sell any products or anything like that. Well, we do sell a product, which is our expertise and our way of...
That's a product.
...doing, you know, my company, I co-founded it with one of my best friends. And I've heard 1,000 stories about people saying that it's a bad idea, doing it with your friends. But still, what we do is I'm more into the sound type of part of media. He's into the image. And we work as a team together. And we don't want to be just another company that just spews out every single, you know, how should I put this, reality show or, you know, independent film that you've seen out there. It's just trying to do something that's different. Something that can actually interest people and try not to be as greedy and as, you know, I don't know, controlist as some companies are. Some media companies, record labels, things like that. And it's mostly legacy. It's not just about obviously making money because, you know, good intentions and good ideas don't put food on your plate. Dude. Mm. So it's just the idea of putting your name out there, getting people to notice you, and maybe even someone bigger might notice you and join forces, but maybe take up a large equity in what we like to do. And we would still have creative control over it. And that's what I think should be most about. I mean, obviously you need to do money, but it's mostly what you get out of it. If you do something that you hate, then you're probably not in the right business.
It's going to be difficult to be passionate about something you hate.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're doing it because you hate it so much that what you're trying to do is to promote the hate for it.
Can I say something different, please? Can we assume if we can assume we are presenting a whole community or a whole city, and if we are all of us, we are men or we are going to establish new business in order to just maximize our profit to be rich. Okay? So assume we are in one country, we are working together, all of us, to maximize our profit, to increase our wealth. So I'm just going to ask you, who are going to look after our environment? Who are going to look after our cultural values? Who will be looking after our inspiration, our happiness? Who will be looking after our human needs to be happy, to create, to use this money or to use these wealth to create happiness for everybody?
Yeah. But you don't have to have one thing without the other. I mean, this is a university where you have, is it 18,000 students, typically? 18,000 students. I understand that this was broadcast to the university wide so that anybody could come along. I'm delighted that apparently this is bigger than the average number of people that have normally turned up to a workshop of this type. So if the number of people interested in starting a business is this few, I don't think there's a problem with the number of people that are not in this room who will do all of those things. I think if we focus on the people in this room who want to start a business and what they want to start a business for, I don't think it's it's detrimental to health and culture and the environment. You know, there are many products out there that are environmentally friendly. They are about improving the environment.
Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
I just want to promote the ideas of how we can create a business model to trade on social environmental projects. And because this is a new trend on the UK industry, for example, in the UK banking sector, we have got the UK Green Investment Bank. This bank, they are not just doing the traditional forms of banking service and considering the social environmental issues, but they are creating money from considering the social environmental project. So this is totally different. So this is what I'm going to promote. I just want to say how to create new entrepreneurial business model that will be based on maintaining social and environmental impact.
What you just said is similar to what I'm doing. So in my country, Nigeria doesn't believe in owning your own marketing company. Yeah. They believe that why not just call a group of people that have just finished studying marketing and just let them promote their product. That's why I'm trying to have my own marketing company. So I can just pick like this group, because in my country we're having like unemployment problems. So what I want to do is pick all these marketers that finished school or finished a master's degree and put them in my own company. Let's all sit down and create an idea of how to help other businesses grow. I'm trying to help other people, not trying to help myself. Just I'm picking like other marketers, come to my own company and like, let's help ourselves in like creating ideas.
I had something to say about the environmental, well, making money out of being environmentally friendly and everything like that. Well, you probably remember I always speak about these guys. I absolutely love Tesla. Tesla is probably one of the breakthrough companies that have been almost this close to being bankrupt and now are making a difference in the world like no other company has ever done. Greenpeace can probably, I don't know exactly what to say, but Greenpeace has nothing on these guys when it comes to what they've done for the world. Not even America, not the country, but the world. So Tesla has left all of their patents open for use. So all of the patents that the company that Elon Musk owns are open for any other company to use. And he, in fact, used this first engine patent from Nikola Tesla, which he decided to keep open himself. So this is about bettering the world and getting closer to the utopia that we've always wanted than to make profit for himself. He's poured his own money, not his own company's money, his own money onto projects that people laughed at him when he started saying, yeah, I'm gonna create a car company. For the first time, that's been, when electric cars were introduced in California and things like that, the EV1 and things like that, General Motors laughed at it. And after a while, they just scrapped them. They started recalling them and destroying them. And now we have this amazing, uprising in terms of renewable energies. And Tesla, by doing this, now we have, very recently in the news, we have companies like Ford, like Daimler, like Mercedes, all of them going, right, we're going to start building our own supercharger ports, our own supercharger stations, and we're going to start competing with Tesla. And these are companies that don't want to better the world. They just want to make money out of it. And because of Tesla, they're actually bettering the world a bit. They're creating supercharging stations all across the US, most likely going to come to the UK, and that's it.
Okay, we've just had the test run. I'm conscious that we haven't got too much
time. Do you want to ask a question?
No?
You okay?
No. Right, I'm just trying to think what we can cover in the next 5 minutes. We haven't touched on really money and finance and funding at all.
It's very important for startup. I just think a very, very quick run through because, there are different elements to funding a business. And I think a lot of people starting up a business think, oh, I'm going to need to go and get a bunch of money. Well, actually, an awful lot of people don't. If you've got to think very long and hard about what you are going to be launching in terms of a business in the first instance, and in most cases you can probably acquire money from the community around you without going and inheriting a huge bank debt. Community funding is if you do need money I've been working with a company recently that has launched a an app, and it's a sort of a business modeling app, and it's quite successful. And he decided to go with a community funding model. So he went online, created a little video, put it up there, and within a few days he had over 1,000 people who were prepared to put a small amount of money up to help the development of that particular product get to a finished item. And the way that works, for anybody that's not aware of community funding, most of it's now done online, and there are various different sites, various different businesses that run as a community funding model, and you basically say, I need this amount of money to do this thing, to launch this product, and if you give me this amount of money, and often the amount of money is not very great, it can be anywhere between 10 and 1,000 pounds. We're not talking big money. If you give me this amount of money when this product is launched, I'll give you one of those products back for no money. So effectively, you are giving them something in return for their investment, but you're not giving them cash. What that does, times 1,000, times 10,000, however many people you need to support it, it gives you a pot of cash that is not going to result in you having a huge bank debt at the end of it. You've got the money, you then go and do the development, and then you can, at a much lower cost, provide a finished product back to those individuals who invested in you in the first place. And hopefully, if the product or service is of the right quality, you've got 1,000 evangelists out there who are going to go and market your product for you, so that you've got other people, not just yourself, who's creating new business for your operation. So that's one very, very good way of doing it. There are the more traditional ways, but I just wanted to touch a little bit on the funding model, because again, a lot of people who are early stage concept phase don't consider what they need to do in terms of delivering a return on their investment. And while it might be great for some of you to say, I want to start a business to do good, fantastic. You can only do good if you've got enough money coming into the household to enable you to pay your bills to carry on doing that thing. So please don't be fooled by the idea that you can all just go out and start up businesses and make no money, because you'll have nothing to live on and you won't last very long. So whatever your model is, it's got to make a profit. Even if you want to plow all your profits back in, or you want to give them to good causes, fantastic, but you have to have a product or service that's going to make a profit. So you need, after you have got somebody to pay money for whatever this product or service is, you need to cover all of the costs of manufacture of that product, all the cost of marketing, all the costs of any people that are producing it for you, all the costs of overheads, buildings, light, heat, power, your own salary, all of that stuff, and then have enough money to go and make some more. So you have to have what's called a return on investment. If you go out there and you borrow some money and you invest it in something, you have to be able to sell enough and have enough money left at the end of it to have more than you started off with. So having a return on investment is a necessary thing when you are creating a business model. Now, how long your return on investment is can be very different. In one business, it might be a month. In most businesses, it tends to be a year or two. If your return on investment model is longer than 3 years, the chances are that business won't last. So most businesses have a return on investment period. And I mean, you know, you're lecturing in some of this stuff. If you've got a return on investment that goes out 5-10 years, the chances are you will run out of money before you ever get a profit. So it's very, very important to make sure you understand how much money you need, how much it's going to cost, when you will start bringing more money into the company that is going out to pay all the costs.
And when you do that, when you're doing that business plan, I would suggest you do a realistic forecast.
Yeah. And then do another
then
one.
Make a much more pessimistic forecast, which will then mean that you need more money to sustain you to start with. And then do another one that's much more pessimistic than that. Start with that. Yeah. So you
don't slit your throat in the process. So I mean, you know, that's not you're too depressing about this. This is
no, good. No, no, no. but the point is that if you do better than your most pessimistic outlook, you will be feeling good.
Yeah.
Because if you can still go into it on that very pessimistic outlook of it taking a lot longer than you thought to get to a sustainable level of sales or whatever, then you know when you're setting out that you can last it out. You're not going to be, it won't be a white knuckle ride.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to just about have enough money.
Always have some spare almost, cash.
Yeah, exactly.
Spare cash is really important. Yeah.
So we're going to have to wind up in a minute, I'm afraid. It's gone by very quickly. Any last questions from anyone?
So, you know how I said, like, I was going to try and create my own marketing firm and everything. It doesn't really involve creating a particular product. You know, like now what you're doing, like advising company. And so what's your own work? So what are you selling? Like what are you trying
What am I selling?
Yeah, what are you selling?
I'll tell you what I'm selling. I'm selling me.
Good.
I'm selling me. That is my product.
You're selling your ideas.
I'm selling knowledge. At the end of the day, I advise businesses on how to improve their performance, how to improve the teams, how to get good leadership, how to make the best use of their skills, to know which market. Lots of people out doing the same thing as I am. I'm selling me. You either like me or you don't. If you think that I'm the sort of person that can help you, then you may well pay money for me to come and help you in your business. If you think I couldn't possibly work with that Clive Hayward, he's a horrible guy, I don't like what he says, I don't like the way he does it, you'll go and find somebody else to do it. So in what you do, you have to create an aura around yourself. You have to have knowledge, you have to have experience, you have to be up to speed on what is going on, but it's about credibility. And I hope that this man here wouldn't have asked me in today if I had no credibility. Otherwise, why would you bother to invite me in?
On that bombshell, we'll draw it to a close. So I'd like to thank Clive for coming in today and giving us a good varied discussion there on from electric vehicles to coffee shops, I think, and
yes.
A few other places in between.
So coffee, good. A good place to finish.
Yeah, that's good. Right, thanks very much, Clive. Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information, visit radiolab.beds.ac.uk/businessmatters.